At this time, we are going to convene the February 15th, 2001 meeting of the House Committee on Agriculture and Forestry. I want to welcome all of you and thank you for attending today. And to start off, we are going to hear House Bill 2552 first, and I would like to state to all the members that it's the chair's intention to move every single bill in front of us today in a relatively short period of time, having exhausted all of the questions that we want to ask on these issues. We have, Ray, would you go ahead and read House Bill 2552?
Yes, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2552, which is scheduled for a public hearing only, establishes a program to partially compensate participating farmers when a grain processor defaults on payment. It provides for an assessment on grain farmers electing to participate in the program, creates a farmer protection pool fund, and declares an emergency effective July 1, 2001. Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Ray. I do appreciate that. We have one person signed up to testify. I might let you all know that this bill was brought by Representative Tom Butler from Ontario, and I have actually companion legislation that goes a little further than this that is part of the ABT bill, which is 2048, which we passed out, which is requesting the establishment of a interim task force to look at a very similar issue that actually goes a little further in terms of bonding and indemnity fund concepts. The chair would like to say that Representative Butler has declined to come down today to talk about the bill precisely because he has indicated that he would like to support House Bill 2048 and its possible eventuality. However, that does not diminish the need to have the bill or hear the bill. And so the one person that we have signed up is Mike Dewey from the Oregon Wheat League. And Mike, I will give you the option if you'd like to testify in support to the concepts and the reasons why we need a bill like this. Please do. Thank you, Mike, for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mike Dewey, representing the Oregon Wheat Growers League, and I will be very brief. Just so you know, the Oregon Wheat Growers League supports the approach of a committee to take a look at an indemnity fund that would protect growers. There are Idaho growers, grain growers, are protected under a fund that they have if there is a bankruptcy similar to the ABT situation. So first of all, I want to make it very clear that we think it is appropriate to have this discussion not only about an indemnity fund, but also taking a look at the bonding requirements, the warehouse requirements in terms of inspections and reporting. A couple sessions ago, the Wheat Growers introduced some legislation that created an advisory committee to take a look at how grain warehouses were inspected. And at one point in time, quite frankly, for the state-licensed programs, there was a lack of money in part to inspect the programs from a financial standpoint. And that's where the various entities get into trouble.
Mr. Dewey?
Yes, ma'am.
Excuse me, please. Would you move one of those microphones over in front of you?
Yes, I'll do that.
For the benefit of the audience, the committee, we kind of had you in between.
Yeah, I don't want to appear as though I'm at a press conference today.
You're working today. Thank you.
And I'll speak a little louder, too. Well, thank you very much for that. Basically, we think there are a lot of reasons to take a look at requirements, bonding requirements, inspections, auditing, those kinds of factors. The bill before you, and I had not had a chance to talk to Representative Butler, the bill before you would set up an indemnity fund funded by grain growers for the protection of potential bankruptcies down the road. When you have sold your grain to someone and they're unable to pay for whatever reason, there would be this fund that you could access. And I didn't have a chance to let him know that the Oregon Wheat Growers League would oppose this approach today, because the wheat grower, the grain grower, would be paying into the fund. And they've had these conversations, and at this point in time, they are not ready to assess themselves to fund this particular program. I want to say that there are a couple reasons for that. First of all, for every bushel of wheat that's sold in Oregon or outside of Oregon but produced by a grain grower, there is a 3-cent assessment in the state law that goes to the Oregon Wheat Commission. So they're already making a contribution to another fund. Secondly, because prices are so low in the grain market, substantially below production costs, they're not ready to take some additional money out of their pocket. And so at that point in time, they just don't feel that it's appropriate to move here. Obviously, you'd want, I think, to have the grain growers say this is in our best interest. I think the best approach is not to look at it from one commodity, but to take a look at it from all of the commodities and see whether or not there's enough buy-in, the approach that Representative Krupp has. This stems, though, from the Ontario area where there was a bankruptcy about 4 or 5 years ago, and a number of farmers got burnt, not as large as the ABT situation, but still individuals lost money in those transactions. So I just wanted to say that we are very favorable toward the approach in looking at programs, indemnity programs, and others to protect growers, but we don't think it is proper in this legislature, one, to do it unless you have the buy-in of the commodity groups. And at this point in time, you don't have the buy-in of the wheat growers to fund an indemnity fund. So with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Yes, Representative Ackerman, please.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. I just had a couple of questions. I believe in the bill in principle, there's no problem. I was concerned that as I read this, does this become a part of any existing Oregon Revised statutory section?
Representative Nelson, Representative Ackerman, I think I'm getting your answer. The answer is no. This would be an entirely new process. We do not have this for any, to the best of my knowledge, any agricultural commodity. This would be the first. We've had a number of discussions about it, but we haven't gotten to the point to have anybody actually assess themselves.
Yeah, that, maybe just follow up, because it's just sort of a foundation for a concern I might have. I note that under Section 3, subsection 5 on page 2, then new section 4. Section 5 states that the Department of Agriculture may establish the assessments by rule, and I assume you mean by its rulemaking authority. Then the next section down, the department develops an allocation formula. And later on in the Act, there's obviously going to be a claims processing and procedure. My question to you is, would that be better fleshed out in rulemaking rather than in the legislation? And if so, should the Act contain a greater grant of rulemaking authority for that purpose?
Well, Madam Chair and Representative Ackerman, first of all, we don't want to go through the rulemaking.
Okay.
In terms of having a reason to do that, because we don't want the bill to go anywhere. But if you had such a situation, I think you have to have at least some parameters that would guide the rulemaking. And the reason I say that in particular is you have a fund over here, and you have issues as to how much could one individual farmer or farm group get, how much of the money would you want to expend, because you don't want a situation where you spend it all and then the next week there is another bankruptcy. Probably is not going to happen, but you wouldn't want that to occur. And the people that paid in didn't get anything because it went to the other party. So you've got all those kinds of issues, but our preference is not to have that conversation with the Department of Agriculture.
And why is that?
Because we don't support the bill. We support the concept of the task force as opposed to an...
All right.
Okay. You have additional questions? Vice Chair Nelson, please jump in now.
Okay.
See, Mike thought you had to get away, didn't you?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Dewey, how many individuals would be impacted by this?
First of all, we're talking about the definition of grain, and I do not know how many grain growers there are. We represent the Oregon Wheat Growers League, but all grain growers pay into the Oregon Wheat Commission, but not all grain growers are members of the Oregon Wheat League. But there'll be a substantial number, both large and small farmers, that would be assessed under this program.
You think follow-up, I mean, is it 2,000? Is it?
I could get you the information because the Oregon Wheat Commission knows how many different farms are paying into the fund, so that's very easy for me to get you that information.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
Great. Hearing no further questions, Mike, thank you very much. Appreciate your time. We're going to close if there's no one else here, we do have someone else here. I think ODA would like to come forward and say a few words. Feel free. The chair would also like to recognize that Representative Bob Jensen is here, and he will be testifying next as soon as we're done with this particular issue. Chuck, welcome, for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Chuck Craig, Deputy Director, Department of Ag. With me is Jim Kramer, the Acting Administrator of our Commodity Inspection Division. Be very brief, Mr. Chair. We support the concept in House Bill 2552. We very much appreciate and applaud efforts, both of Representative Butler and yourself, of raising this issue to the consciousness of folks, and we pledge our support to your effort through the work group to do what we can along those lines.
We appreciate that. And Jim, did you have anything to add to that?
I don't, Chairman.
Okay.
Mr. Chair.
Vice Chair Nelson.
Just because I'm, trying to get a feeling for farming from a different view than I've ever participated in before. Why have we never done anything like this before?
Mr. Chair, Representative Nelson, I don't know if I can answer that, except that a lot of times we don't do anything until something bad happens that we realize that we should do something. And we've had, in the past 3 years, a series of kind of catastrophic agricultural economy events in the state, and several bankruptcies and so on. And this issue is on the minds of agricultural producers now, and it's a kind of a teachable moment, if you will. And
okay.
So.
All right, any further questions, these gentlemen? Gentlemen, thank you both. Appreciate you coming today. And with that, if there is no last call, okay, the public hearing on House Bill 2552 is hereby closed, and the chair would like to open up a public hearing on House Bill 2604. And Ray, would you be kind enough to share with us what this one's all about?
Yes, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2604 restates government employee pesticide operator license exemption. It exempts state and local government bodies from pesticide operator license requirements when applying the pesticides to the property of another local governmental body. It adds those conducting research on pesticides, applying pesticides within any government-controlled land, applying pesticides for controlling or eradicating noxious weeds or pests to the current pesticide operator license exemption. It extends the exemption from financial responsibility requirements for the purposes of controlling or eradicating noxious weeds or pests. Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Ray. Representative Jensen, thank you for coming. This is your bill, and would love to have you explain it to us.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair. It's a pleasure to be here to bring this bill to you, and the detailed explanation I think I'll leave to the gentleman that I'd like to introduce to you, who is the County Commissioner, Bill Hensel from Umatilla County. For those of you who are unfamiliar with that portion of the state that's still identified as uncharted wilderness, kind of over where the Columbia River bends and goes north into Washington, where the area immediately south of that. Commissioner Hensel brought this bill to my attention, And I first, Mr. Chair, must apologize to the committee. There were amendments made on this bill that are necessary to please, I think we worked with the Department of Agriculture, and in order to make that the bill fit their needs, we have some amendments. My staff is out right now running copies of those amendments. We'll have them to bring in to you immediately. I was unaware that they had not gotten to your committee staff member, Mr. Kelly, and I apologize to Mr. Kelly and to the members of the committee. The bill is basically a cost-saving measure. It's a measure that would provide that fundamentally one local government would be able to apply a chemical to the property of another local government without having to be seen or perceived as a commercial applicator, etc. At the present time, I think Mr. Hansel probably will tell you the county has the equipment and personnel to do this, but they cannot proceed without or to do it for the city or other government agencies without some significant increase in their cost and in the licensing of the applicant. So if it would please the chair and members of the committee, I'd just like to have Mr. Hansel come forward and maybe offer the explanations there.
Certainly. The chair would call forward Mr. Bill Hansel. And it is Commissioner Hansel, is it not?
Correct.
Welcome. For the name, state your record.
Thank you.
No,
right.
For the record, state your name. Boy, it's getting late already. It's only 4 o'clock. Jeez. Oh, well.
Thank you, Mr.
I'll drink some coffee here if it's all right with you, Bill. Go ahead, get started. I'll have a cup of coffee. Wake up.
My name is Bill Hansel. Actually, I come before you probably wearing three different hats. First of all, I'm from a farm family. My ancestors go back into the 1800s, involved in agriculture. I grew up on a farm, and I pulled weeds, I hoed weeds, I sprayed weeds, I cursed at weeds, and so they've been a part, you know, personally anyway. I'm also currently the chair of the State Noxious Weed Board, a position I've held probably for around 10 years. So we've been actively involved in partnershiping with the state in the working on invasive species that have come into our environment. And then thirdly, I also wear the hat of a Umatilla County Commissioner, a local elected official, and have been in that position for 19 years. The genesis of this bill came about where several months ago, our weed supervisor in Umatilla County approached me and said that at a recent meeting that they'd had, officials from the State Department of Agriculture announced that from based upon an opinion that had come down from the Attorney General, that state law required now that all, if you apply pesticides on property that you did not own, that you were required to have a commercial pesticide license. Now, all of our employees have operator licenses, but they have never before ever had to have a commercial license. And he was he was concerned about that. It increased both expenditures and liability for local government and others. I found out that that was kind of throughout the state, anybody. And I guess technically I was also told, to show you the ultimate extreme of that, if a veterinarian was to apply a flea powder to a dog, that technically he would need to have a commercial pesticide license because he was applying a pesticide to property that he didn't own. That would be kind of the extreme, but nevertheless, that was the kind of thing that was there. We have never had to have that before. We've always worked cooperatively. If the ODOT calls the county and say between Yoakum Road and Barnhart Road on the interstate, we have a just newly identified infestation of distaff thistle or something, can you go out and take care of that? We were able to work out agreements and go out and spray the state highway. Under this, we could not unless we had the commercial license. it's very critical in the battle against invasive species that we have an integrated intermanagement treatment capability, and this is what we've always had, and this is what we've continued to do. So what this bill does cleans up some things, but it also provides what has been our practice ever since I've been a commissioner, ever since I've been involved in the treatment of weeds. The other thing that it would help is that, though it's probably not a great expense overall when you look at it, still taxpayers' dollars, why add more bureaucracy? Why add more expenditure to doing business and having to secure licenses when we've operated without that and done it very effectively? The bill basically states that when a public agency, let's say the county, is involved in spraying invasive weed species, noxious weeds, on other public property, whether it be at the airport in Pendleton where they have extreme infestation of yellow star thistle or the highway, commercial licenses are not needed. And that's what this bill would do. The other potential expenditure for governments is that commercial license puts you in a different insurance bracket, an insurance rating. And it's a higher expense if you have these licenses than if you just have your operators. So that there are these additional expenditures that would be forced, plus the interagency cooperative agreement would be tougher. And it would seem to me to make sense for the passage of this bill. And when it came to my attention, I contacted Representative Jensen, my representative, and I appreciate the effort that he and his staff have made in bringing forward this bill. He saw the need and responded to it. So with that, I'll...
Thank you, Commissioner. I do appreciate that. Representative Jensen, we have 6 pages of amendments here.
Yes.
Can you share with us why so many?
Mr. Can I defer this portion to the Department of Agriculture?
Oh, you certainly may.
Since these were at their request.
Ah, okay.
I might, Representative, if I may
mention,
sure. Working with Representative Jensen's office, we also worked with the Department of Agriculture to make sure that we didn't have redundancy, particular wording and this type of thing. They came back to us with some suggestions. There were parts of the bill that were already covered in other bill, statutes already on the books, so you know there wasn't any reason to be redundant, so those were going to be removed. So a lot of these have come with a partnership with the State Department of Agriculture.
Okay. I believe Representative Krieger has a question.
Yeah, for either one of you, would this change in any way the amount or manner in which pesticides would be applied, and would you be still following label and things of that nature?
No. Absolutely.
It would, Mr. Chair, Representative Krieger, no, it would not change that. It'd still follow all of the rules, regulations, that they currently do and have to.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Chair?
Certainly.
Yes, Representative Jensen, nice to have you here today. And Commissioner Hanfield, is this a statewide, not licenses and license, but authority for Yamhill County Road people to work down in over in your county? I mean, are there boundary lines, and what happens when you get to the Idaho border? And I'm just curious how you handle this territorial issue.
Representative Nelson, what this would do within the state of Oregon, we have had in some cases, particularly when we were dealing with bioagents, where we had counties from different parts of the state personnel helping in other places. I don't know that we've had that as far as pesticide application, but I know that Morrow and Umatilla County have worked together. Union, Wallowa, and Baker County actually have a tri-county area that all 3 counties are working together on. So in some cases, there is cross-county jurisdictional. But the nature of the bill, it would be a statewide umbrella bill that, but only within the state. If you go across county lines, like we share the county line with Washington, and it's not the river for part of our border, so we do have a much greater opportunity to do cooperative work. We'll work with memorandums of understanding, or, and in some cases, their state law is different than ours, so we have to work out in some type of an agreement before we can do that. But this bill is just for Oregon.
Follow-up, please, Mr. Chair. But this means that you can go across county lines. You can, let's say it's the California med fly in Oregon. and you may have greater expertise in that particular type of bug, so you could spray the whole state to protect our crops, right?
Potentially, yes.
And could you...
Surely.
Please, and could you use commercial transportation to do this?
Representative Nelson, I'm not sure what you mean by commercial transportation.
Well, I mean, as in helicopters?
Yes, you could do
it.
Right. And in some places, we actually contract with providers to do that.
Or you would contract with the commercial sector to do that for you? That's what I'm trying to decide.
Yes. It depends on, Representative, it depends on what capabilities local jurisdictions have. Now, like in Umatilla County, we've got on-ground, state-of-the-art spray vehicle trucks. If we require an aerial application, we would need to contract that out. I'm not sure of any county that would have that capability. There may be some, but I'm not familiar with it.
And last question in this area of territory. So the expertise among city departments, county, who gets the right to do this? I mean, we have a project, and I mean, how do you determine which division of government's going to take care of the airport? It's a city airport, but it's way out in the county. I'm just curious.
Representative Nelson, it would depend upon where the, you know, individual local jurisdiction. I can speak for Umatilla County in particular. The two agencies that probably have the greatest weed control capability are the county. None of the cities that I'm aware of have much in the way of equipment, and so they would contract with us. Yeah. The Department of Transportation has some capability, but in some cases it's less expensive for them to contract with us. And in our case, the Confederated Tribes of the Umatilla Indian Reservation have some capability as well, although we still have intercooperative agreements, and we do contract work for them as well.
All right. Thank you very much. Do we have any additional questions? Gentlemen, we appreciate both of you being here. We are going to move to, I think, an explanation of the amendments, perhaps a bit more when ODA comes forward. However, I would at this time excuse the two of you and like to call ODOT to come forward. And welcome. And please, for the record, state your name.
Good afternoon, Chairman Crepp and members of the committee. I'm signed up as Doug Tindall, but obviously I'm not Doug Tindall.
And I'm, no, ma'am, you are certainly not.
I'm representing Doug Tindall, our state maintenance engineer, and I'd like to give you ODOT's thoughts on...
And your name again?
I'm Sue Chase.
Sue, thank you.
As was mentioned earlier, House Bill 2604 eliminates the licensing requirement when government employees are applying pesticide on government property. And currently, a second license is required when government employees apply pesticides on property under the control of a different government entity than the one by which they're employed. And the current requirement makes partnerships between governmental entities more bureaucratic and less effective. The Oregon Department of Transportation would like to develop partnerships with locals and governments to control noxious weeds on state highways and county and federal roads. We've achieved a three-way partnership in Malheur County with the county and the Bureau of Land Management. The requirement for duplicate licensing has stifled some other opportunities. The passage of House Bill 2604 would assist ODOT in establishing more partnerships to better control noxious weeds in Oregon and would be a step toward breaking down the bureaucratic red tape.
Excellent. Thank you, Sue. Members, do we have questions of Sue? No doubt. Wow, see how easy that was. Thank you, Sue. We appreciate your comments here today. The chair would...
Mr. Chair, it's a good thing Mr. Tindall didn't come. He would have kept him.
All right, the chair would like to call Chuck Craig and Chris Kirby, please, from Oregon Department of Agriculture. Gentlemen, welcome, and once again, for the record, explain to us what this bill means to ODA and what these amendments might mean.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, for the record, Chuck Craig with the Department of Agriculture, and with me is Chris Kirby, the administrator of our pesticide division. We support the bill very strongly. The bill allows for agencies to cooperate with each other for the control of noxious weeds, and that facilitating that cooperation we feel is very desirable, and that's the primary purpose of the bill. We would be happy if you like to explain what the amendments are that we requested. We have had time to check them, and they are correct as we asked for them. So,
yes, that would be quite in order if you could share with us basically what you're trying to do with the amendments.
Okay. Just want you to identify yourself.
Yes, for the record, my name is Chris Kirby. I'm with the Oregon Department of Agriculture as the administrator of the Pesticides Division. The proposed amendments to House Bill 2604 delete current subsection 4. This is on page 1, deleting lines 12 through 29, and then on page 2, deleting lines 1 through 12. We feel it's appropriate to delete this section because the contents of this section are actually stated more clearly in ORS 634116.
Okay.
Excuse me, please, Mr. Chair.
Yes.
Kirby, are you on the first page?
No, he just went to the second page.
Where you said delete 12 through 24? Mm-hmm.
Representative Nelson, Mr. Chair, yes, I believe that coincides with what's on the proposed amendments.
This is how this reads. Is that a different way?
No.
Oh, okay, yes, thank you. Okay, thank you. Thank you. Sorry.
It's always easier to have hand-engrossed versions.
Boy, is
to,
it.
To follow.
Oh, thank you.
That by deleting that section, then there is some renumbering that's required.
Okay.
On page 2. Then on page 3, line 31.
Chris, could I get you to pull that microphone a little closer and speak up? Thank you very much.
On page 3, line 32, inserting the words in writing so that the language would read, the liability insurance company shall notify the department in writing at least 30 days prior to any cancellation of insurance coverage. The department believes this is necessary to appropriately document the action by the insurance company. And it certainly clarifies that verbal notification is not sufficient. Then on page 4, line 9, addition of the United States of America along with the state of Oregon and federal or state agencies. And similarly on line 10, the addition of federal, so the 12A would read United States of America, the state of Oregon, federal or state agencies, instrumentalities, political subdivisions, counties, cities, towns, municipal corporations, irrigation, drainage, or other districts, or other federal, state, or local government bodies. And this clearly states the agencies that would be covered. Also on page 4, line 25, after the word towns, insertion of the word municipal before corporations, so it clarifies that we are talking about government corporations, not private corporations. and after districts, the insertion of governmental before bodies to again clarify that we're talking about agencies, and this sort of wording is consistent with the wording proposed for subsection 12. So subsection 12 and 13 would be very similar in the wording. They also on page 4, line 44, to change sub A to read application of any restricted use pesticide, or, and then line 45, the application of any pesticide using machine-powered, use of the application of any pesticide using a machine-powered device. Again, this is clarification and simplified wording, actually. And then continuing with that, actually, on page 5, then to delete sub B. The amendments that you have before you also include section 4, commencing on page 4 of the amendments. And this suggests some word changes to ORS 634372, which outlines the prohibited acts. These changes are just word changes and have been proposed by legislative council. It does not change the substance of the prohibited acts, just the language. And then finally, on page 6 of the proposed amendments is section 5, which specifies that this 2001 Act being necessary for the immediate preservation of the public peace, health, and safety, an emergency is declared to exist, and this 2001 Act takes effect on its passage.
All right. Well, that explains the amendments. Members, we have questions of these two gentlemen? Representative Krieger.
Chair Krupp. Chris, is there any difference in the type of herbicide or pesticide as far as the requirement for licensing? Are there things that can be applied that fall within those definitions that there's not a restriction because of what they are, or is it just blanket everything?
Representative Krieger, Mr. Chair, in the case of government agencies applying pesticides, their employees are required to be licensed and certified, just as commercial applicators are, when they're using a restricted-use pesticide or when they're applying any pesticide using machine-powered equipment. That is the current requirement, and this proposed amendment actually clarifies that requirement.
Certainly.
Follow up. Define a little bit what the restricted thing you're talking about, or you mentioned which ones would be required. If it is, you used a term or I missed it.
Representative Krieger, Mr. Chair, there are certain pesticide products and pesticide active ingredients which have been declared by the United States Environmental Protection Agency, which has federal authority over pesticide products, as being restricted use.
Restricted, that was the term you used.
Restricted use.
That is restricted. They have to have the license, and there's a list, so if it's not on the restricted list, they wouldn't have to have the license.
They would not be required to have a license for general use materials, non-restricted use materials, if they were not using machine-powered equipment.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Nolan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just to be absolutely clear, the amendments are consistent with the intent of the original bill, and maybe my question is to Commissioner Hansel, are acceptable to the sponsors.
Commissioner, come forward, please.
Split between what Ag is proposing and what the original intent of the bill.
Commissioner, state your name again.
Commissioner Bill Hansel, Umatilla County, representing Nolan, Mr. Chair. Yes, they are. They're very consistent. In fact, we have worked cooperatively together in bringing forward these amendments. It was just a matter of timing and glitches that they didn't get here sooner. And I appreciate very much the work of the department and these gentlemen here to clarify and take out redundant language. And I'm supportive very much of these amendments.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right. If there are no further questions, gentlemen, thank you very much. Appreciate you coming and sharing your thoughts today. The chair would like to read into the record. Oregonians for Food and Shelter supports House Bill 2604. The bill before you today was filed at the request of Umatilla County Commissioner. There I go again. It simply makes the law clear that governmental entities are not required to obtain a pesticide operator's license in order to have a licensed employees apply pesticides to public properties. It is essential that those not familiar with pesticide licensing requirements of ORS Chapter 634 understand that this does not in any way reduce the training or licensing requirements for those who will actually be doing the application. They must meet the requirements of and be licensed as a public applicator or be issued a public trainee certificate if in training. The purpose of requiring a commercial pest control business is to obtain an operator's license is to ensure that the business meets the minimum requirements of financial responsibility and public liability insurance for personal injury or property damage. The state of Oregon or its agencies, counties, cities, municipal corporations, and public utilities will always be adequately covered from a financial responsibility and a public liability perspective. Therefore, this additional license and fee serves no real purpose or benefit. So let it be noted in the public record regarding House Bill 2604. All right, is there anyone else here who would like to testify on 2604? Seeing none, we will close a public hearing on House Bill 2604 and open a work session on House Bill 2604. And the chair would entertain a motion to move the Dash 1 amendments into House Bill 2604. Representative Judy Smith moves the Dash 1 amendments to House Bill 2604. Members, do we have any discussion? Hearing none, will the clerk call the roll?
Representative
Boyle? Aye.
Representative Krieger?
Aye.
Representative Smith?
Aye.
Representative Ackerman?
Aye.
Representative Hobson?
Aye.
Representative Nolan?
Aye.
Vice Chair King?
Excused.
Vice Chair Nelson?
Aye.
Chair Crook?
Aye. The amendments, Dash 1 amendments to House Bill 26 so far are hereby adopted. And the chair would entertain a motion to move House Bill 2604 as amended with a due pass to the full House.
So moved.
We have dual so movings by Representative Nolan and Smith. Thank you both. Members, any discussion? Hearing none, would the clerk call the roll?
Representative Doyle?
Aye.
Representative Krieger?
Aye.
Representative Smith?
Aye.
Representative Ackerman?
Aye.
Representative Hobson?
Aye.
Representative Nolan?
Aye.
Vice Chair King?
Excused.
Vice Chair Nelson?
Aye.
Chair Crook?
Aye. House Bill 2604 is hereby passed to the full House with a due pass recommendation as amended. And the chair would like a volunteer to carry this bill.
Representative Krieger would be most.
I think Representative Krieger is hereby appointed.
Yes.
Thank you for volunteering.
That's an excellent job.
Work session of House Bill 2604 is hereby closed. And the chair would like to open a public hearing on House Bill 2606. And would like to call forth. Well, first of all, we'll have Ray read the synopsis, and ODA will be up on deck.
Yes, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2606 allows State Department of Agriculture employees to enter land with the consent of the owner to identify weeds and to apply or provide for the application of pesticides to the weeds. Current law requires the State Department of Agriculture to notify a landowner when an employee or representative of the department enters a landowner's property for the purpose of weed identification and or application of pesticides. This requirement applies whether or not the landowner has voluntarily given permission for entrance. House Bill 2606 removes the requirement to notify a landowner when a landowner has given permission.
Thank you, Ray. Now, this bill is sponsored by Representative Jensen. However, he's not in the room, so therefore we'd like to call forth ODA, if you would, gentlemen. And the chair at this time would also like to recognize former State Representative Jim Welsh, who's in the back. Welcome, Representative. Gentlemen, for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Chuck Craig, Deputy Director, Department of Agriculture, and with me is Chris Kirby, Administrator of our Pesticide Division. House Bill 2606 is another bill designed to facilitate cooperative efforts, this time between weed control agencies and private landowners, and I will ask Chris Kirby to just briefly explain the bill.
Welcome. For the record?
For the record, my name is Chris Kirby. I'm with the Oregon Department of Agriculture as Administrator of the Pesticides Division. The House Bill 2606 proposes to amend Oregon Revised Statutes Chapter 570, which deal with the authority of local weed control districts to enter property for the inspection of noxious weeds. As presented, this would extend that authority to also the Oregon Department of Agriculture. We do propose some amendments to the bill, specifically in Section 4, to insert wordage such that the Department of Agriculture or of designated weed control districts may enter the land to identify noxious weeds and to implement or provide for the implementation of integrated noxious weed control measures, including but not limited to the application of pesticides to the land. Control or eradication of noxious weeds may be conducted with or without charge to the owner or occupant of the land. A notice as described in subsection 2 of this section is not required for the conduct of activities described in the subsection. We would also propose that the bill be amended to include Section 2, declaring this to be an emergency and effective upon passage.
All right. Representative Doyle, you have a question.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I'm curious about weed control districts. Do we have them now, and where might they be, and what do they do?
Please.
Mr. Chair, Representative Doyle, we do have weed control districts, and they are functions at the county level, and they work cooperatively with the department, but they are formed locally, and they deal with the weed control problems at a local level.
Please.
So is it every county that has these, or where might we find them?
Mr. Chair, Representative Doyle, not every county has an active program, but every county could have one.
Mr. Chair, question.
Certainly.
I'm concerned, am I reading this right, that they can go on a person's land and spray without their permission?
Mr. No. Chair, Representative Smith, no, certainly not.
Well, it says the control and eradication of noxious weeds may be conducted with or without charge to the owner or occupant of the land.
Representative, where are you reading?
We're deleting that part. Beg your pardon. I'm totally off base here. I'm sorry.
Okay.
That's perfectly all right, Representative.
Okay. No, that's very good.
Additional questions? Representative Ackerman.
Yes, Mr. Chair, to the witnesses. The permission that you seek under Section 1 sub 4, you don't specify whether it's oral or written. Do you have a preference on that, or was that just a deliberate omission, or would you feel better if you had written permission to document your rights under this act?
Mr. Chair, Representative Ackerman, I think oral permission would certainly be adequate if we felt that documentation would be necessary in any particular situation. We could, in fact, have a consent form or something like that.
Okay.
But generally speaking, we haven't had a problem with that kind of thing.
Thank you.
So, gentlemen, generally what you're trying to do here is to be respectful of personal and private property rights and to foster a cooperative working relationship with landowners.
Correct, Mr. Chair, but we're also eliminating kind of an unnecessary notice provision when we do have a cooperative relationship and permission.
So it streamlines the efficiency of being able to deliver the service and take care of the problem at hand.
Yes.
All right.
Mr.
Certainly, Vice Chair.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, Mr. Kirby, on your testimony, is this your testimony?
Yes, it is.
It says prepared by Charles Craig, Deputy Director, and Chris Kirby.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I mean, y'all, you mutually came up with this. When we talk about your the weed control district filing liens,
Representative Nelson, Mr. Chair, the current wordage of 570 specifies that the inspector for the local weed control district may enter people's property to identify noxious weeds. A process which is very clearly described there is that the inspector then files a formal notice with the owner of the land to control those weeds. If those weeds are not controlled, then the current wording of 570 authorizes that weed control district to enter onto that property, conduct the control efforts, seek reimbursement for that effort by filing a lien on the property. That's the current wording of 570.
Mr. Chair?
Sure.
Go ahead. What we are doing is adding a kind of a cooperative component to this that allows people to control weeds with permission of the landowner without going through that process and sort of a confrontational, involuntary sort of thing.
That follow-up,
Mr.
Chair, but I don't see where you have eliminated that in this.
We have not
in this effort.
Well, we have not eliminated, Mr. Chair, Representative Nelson, we have not eliminated the nuisance abatement authority of the local weed control districts, nor do we want to, because it may be necessary for them to exercise that. But we have now explicitly added a provision that provides for voluntary and cooperative efforts.
And follow up, Mr.
Sure.
Chair, and do you have many violations or refusals to cooperate currently?
I think I am not the best one to answer that.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, Representative Nelson, there may be some other folks in here with the weed control districts that could speak to.
And the weed control district, Mr. Chair, if I could please, is under whose jurisdiction?
The chair would like to call Commissioner Hansel to come forward again, and he may be able to shed light on this particular subject. Commissioner, for the record.
Bill Hansel, Umatilla County Commissioner, representing Nelson, Mr. Chair. The weed control district is a countywide district that most counties, as has been testified, have at one time adopted. Although districts exist, they also require funding in order for them to be effective, and a lot of budgets, tight budgets, those get cut. The type of folk that we ran into in Umatilla County that were not very cooperative are properties that have been in foreclosure, say Veterans Administration, the bank. So they're not real interested in investing in the property because they're trying to turn it around. They're trying to get rid of it. But in the meantime, it's the seeds are going everywhere else to their neighbors. And so we have found that it's a very effective tool to eradicate or control noxious weeds with the ability to go in, and if they choose not to pay, then we put a lien on the property and just for expenses. But it doesn't happen all that often, but it's a good tool to have when it does happen. Another ownership that we've had trouble with is the railroads. Omaha is the black hole of the universe, and it's difficult to get a very timely response, and the plants are going to seed. You only have windows of opportunity to combat them, and so consequently through a process. It just isn't helter-skelter. We have notification, a waiting period. There's a whole legal setup for it, but that's how we do it in Umatilla County.
Commissioner, I might ask you, how long has the state had authority to take care of the problem and file the liens? That's been in place for some time now, has it not?
Yeah, I think those weed control laws, Mr. Chairman, go back to the 1930s, 1920s. It's been there for, I know the counties have had that. It's been a long-standing provision, but it's up to the local counties to whether or not they choose to enforce that or adopt it.
So, Mr. Chair, if I'm reading this correctly, if the county, which I certainly understand, do not have an active weed control, quote, district, what do you do as a county commissioner? You call Department of Ag and say, could you come help us clean up our county and then charge the landowner?
Well, what the, Representative Nelson, Mr. Chair, what this bill would allow to have happen, as I understand it, is that the state then would be able, where you don't have an active weed control district, the state would be able to provide some control in cooperation with the local landowners. They're not asking in this bill for the same authority that a weed control district would have, but they provide some service where the county is unable to provide it. I personally would be very supportive of this bill.
All right. Members, Representative Krieger, you have a question.
Chair Krupp, probably Mr. Kirby could answer. If you had a large infestation that was getting out of control, it could cover a considerable amount of acreage. I've seen it, like when Tansy was going so horrible down in Tillamook County years ago, and the cost of controlling that would be substantial. Yet, I don't recall that taking place where you use this authority. It went on for years and years, but if it was, it could be very substantial to a landowner. Are they given some length of time upon notification? It seems to me, and where I've been, the weeds that are noxious and you're required to control is being ignored until it becomes a huge problem. And then you've got the problem beyond. And the other part of that might be, what do we do with the federal land that's covered with many, many different things that affect private property, and there's nothing to be done there.
I think, Mr. Chair, Representative Krieger, we do not have the authority as the Department of Agriculture to go through this notice process and go on private land to control weeds. That power is vested with county weed control districts. With respect to federal and other governmental lands, we try to work cooperatively with those organizations to the extent that we can to work on problems of mutual significance. But we really don't have any authority to go on federal land and demand that something be done. But we do work with those entities.
It's amazing how that's reversed, where the feds can come onto the private property and make certain demands that affect us, but yet their activity isn't scrutinized. The part I was getting at wasn't whether the state had the authority to do it, it's whether these weed control boards at the county level could do this, and the fact that we have large infestations that got there because when they were fairly small and confined, we didn't address it years ago. Now we live with it. Thank you.
Representative Ackerman, you have a question?
No, I was
okay.
Thinking of in terms of a motion.
All right, members, we have no additional questions. Gentlemen, thank you very much. Appreciate all of your comments here. The chair is going to close unless there's anyone else who'd like to testify. Okay. I'm going to close a public hearing on House Bill 2606 and open a work session on the House Bill 2606. And the chair would entertain a motion to accept the -1 amendments to House Bill 2606.
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Representative Ackerman moves the -1 amendments in House Bill 2606. Any discussion? Hearing none, would the clerk call the roll?
Representative Doyle?
Aye.
Representative Representative Krieger?
Aye.
Representative Smith?
Aye.
Representative Ackerman?
Aye.
Representative Hobson?
Aye.
Representative Nolan?
Aye.
Vice Chair King?
Excused.
Vice Chair Nelson?
Aye.
Chair Krupp?
Aye. The Dash One Amendments to House Bill 2606 are hereby adopted, and the chair would now entertain a motion to send House Bill 2606 to the full House with a due pass as amended.
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Representative Ackerman moves House Bill 2606 as amended with a due pass recommendation to the full House. Any discussion? Hearing none, would the clerk call the roll?
Representative Doyle?
Aye.
Representative Krieger?
Aye.
Representative Smith?
Aye.
Representative Ackerman?
Aye.
Representative Hobson?
Aye.
Representative Nolan?
Aye.
Vice Chair King?
Excused.
Vice Chair Nelson?
Aye.
Chair Krupp?
Aye. House Bill 2606 is hereby passed to the full House with a due pass recommendation as amended, and I need a carrier. Would someone like to volunteer?
I'll do it, Mr. Chair. I have a profound...
Thank you, Representative Ackerman. We appreciate our help from our urban Democratic friends on this committee.
I want to show that this is not only a bipartisan effort, but it's an effort between rural Republicans and urban Democrats. Happy to accommodate my...
Thank you very much. We do appreciate it. We close the work session on House Bill 2606, and we will be opening a public hearing on Senate Bill 308. And Ray, if you would be so kind as to read the staff measure summary, please.
Yes, Mr. Chair. Senate Bill 308 prohibits the feeding of offal to commercial swine. That's OFFAL. It defines garbage that can be fed to the swine, repeals provisions requiring license in order to feed offal or garbage to the swine, and increases fine for violation from $10 to $250 over to $500 to $5,000. And for the committee's knowledge, Mr. Chair, offal means animal tissue of any kind from any source.
All right. Thank you, Ray. It sounds like awful means awful. ODA, would you please come forward? You're the only people signed up to testify at this time. I appreciate you coming with this issue. And for the record?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, I'm Chuck Craig with the Department of Agriculture. With me is Dr. Andrew Clark, the state veterinarian.
Doctor, it's a pleasure to see you once again and have you for the first time this session in front of our committee. Gentlemen, are we talking about mad cow disease here?
Mr. Chair, that we certainly could be. I will ask Dr. Clark to explain the basis for the concerns that led to the bill.
Thank you. Doctor, for the record, state your name.
Members of the committee, my name is Andrew Clark. I'm the state veterinarian at the Oregon Department of Agriculture. The feeding of material garbage-containing offal to swine can be a potentially disastrous condition because of the transmission of infectious diseases. The specific circumstances with which we're dealing are the source of the garbage potentially being in Oregon from our international seaport and our international airport, thereby a source of garbage which comes from other continents at very short time periods and can harbor viruses that then can affect our swine populations. The ones of particular concern in this case are foot and mouth disease and African swine fever. African swine fever is terribly damaging to the swine population. Foot and mouth disease also involves not only hogs, but cattle and other ruminants. There is a specific case involving South Africa, which is currently happening, in which this precise scenario happened. The ship from East Asia docked at the Durban seaport. Garbage was illegally taken, made into swine feed, transmitted foot and mouth disease, and at this point the export of South African animals and beef is terminated and the economy of Swaziland has been devastated. As of February 2nd, it had cost them $257 million. There are, at this point, are no licensed garbage feeders in Oregon. We have had a program for that, but it is simply a practice which is not happening anymore, so it's an ideal time to simply ban it. 17 other states have already done so. The Oregon Pork Producers Council strongly supports this legislation because they do not want to take any chances with their industry. And I believe, Mr. Chairman, that there is testimony from other livestock organizations as well in support of this.
Mr. Chair.
Certainly.
Yes, Mr. Craig, Dr. Clark, why don't you just include the whole livestock world, not just swine? Or why don't we? Or let me see who sponsored this. Department of Agriculture? Why wouldn't we just include the entire livestock world? Why we just said swine? I'm just curious.
Mr. Chairman, Representative...
So dangerous.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Nelson, the feeding of garbage to swine has been a licensed activity, and swine are the only species to which garbage has been commercially fed. And so this is specifically related to the feeding of garbage to swine. There are federal regulations concerning the requirements for cooking of garbage, which go to commercial swine feeding, and Oregon law for the license has followed those commercial regulations. Federal regulations. But at this point, there are no licenses active in Oregon, and we can terminate the program without affecting the industry.
But follow-up, Mr. Chair, but should we not restrict this for all livestock?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Nelson, garbage is not used for other livestock. It's only for swine.
Follow-up.
I'm sorry, perhaps I'm not understanding your
question. Yes, there are various animals that do enjoy, unfortunately, cooked tissue. yuck. Many sources.
No argument for me there, Vice Chair. That's yuck.
I'm sorry. I don't know what to say. Maybe I don't know what tissue is. Or brain's tissue?
Mr. Chairman.
Our liver's tissue?
Yes, anything of animal origin is considered tissue.
And thereby would be defined as offal, correct?
Mr. Chairman, no, it is...
Oh.
It is...
edible offal.
I'm sorry.
All right.
We're getting into an area where, for example, meat and bone meal does not fall into this sort of definition. And... meat and bone meal is part of the protein supplementation, which is often used in animal feed, and there are very significant federal regulations concerning the importation by USDA and FDA regulations concerning the use of those sort of materials, which are standard operations. But what we're talking about here is the use of commercial garbage.
So, Doctor, let me, in the staff measure summary, this bill defines garbage that can be fed to swine as waste accumulations of vegetable matter, okay, and it says it can be fed to swine only if it is accumulated from the domestic household of the person, solely from a fruit or vegetable cannery, processing plant, sorting establishment, solely from a bakery, or a combination of garbage types allowed.
Mr. Chairman, that is correct.
Those are the only sources that you can feed garbage to that will be permitted under this bill, correct?
Right, and the reason for that is that cannery waste and bakery waste does not include animal tissues, which are the vector of the diseases about which we're concerned. And cannery waste and bakery waste is non-threatening, and it's a good use of that material, and so this bill does not prohibit that feeding of those materials.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, please.
I don't ask any more about this. Me sick. Well, I think it's really important because, I mean, here we're concerned about a new industry, as you spoke yesterday to the Senate committee when I was there, and you know, I'm concerned about controlling disease, and it's very important. I think elk farming is very important to the future of this state, Dr. Clark, but what I'm concerned about is that we're not looking after just one type of livestock when it comes to, you know, what they're being fed. I mean, somebody's looking after this, are they?
So Dr. Clark, I think where Representative Nelson's going is what's happening in Europe with the mad cow disease scare, is that a problem we need to be concerned about in this state?
It is of great concern throughout the United States to prevent the incursion of bovine spongiform encephalopathy. And to that...
And that decoded is mad cow disease. Thank you.
And in that regard, the importation of any potentially infected material into the United States from affected countries has been banned by USDA regulation. And then further, in the feed manufacturing realm within the United States, FDA has controls about what can and cannot be used so that the potential, if the disease were here, it would be prevented from becoming amplified and spreading.
So in other words, if I'm hearing you correctly, you're saying the FDA has controls to keep those types of things being fed to those animals that might create the infections.
Yeah, there is a very high level of awareness.
There is, okay. Okay.
And this includes fish, right? Mr. Chairman, Dr. Clark? Fish? Garbage?
In terms of this bill, that would be, I'm sorry, Mr. Chair, Representative Nelson, that's correct. That would be tissue of animal origin.
Okay. All right, members, do we have any additional questions? Hearing none, thank you both very much. I appreciate your thoughts. Anyone else here to testify on Senate Bill 308? Hearing none, we'll close the public hearing on SB 308 and open a work session on SB 308. Ray, we have no amendments, correct?
That is correct, Mr. Chair.
All right. The chair will entertain a motion to pass Senate Bill 308 to the full House with a due pass. So moved. Representative Ackerman moved Senate Bill 308 to the full House with a due pass. Any discussion? Hearing none, clerk call the roll, please.
Representative Doyle?
Aye.
Representative Krieger?
He's excused.
Representative Smith?
Aye.
Representative Ackerman?
Aye.
Representative Hobson?
Aye.
Representative Nolan?
Aye.
Vice Chair King?
Excused.
Vice Chair Nelson?
Aye.
Chair Crook?
Aye. Senate Bill 308 is hereby passed to the full House. The due pass recommendation. The chair needs a carrier.
Or we can go to consent.
Yes.
Why not?
Oh, yeah. Mary, your turn.
Well, members, are there any objections to moving Senate Bill 308 to the consent calendar? Hearing none, Senate Bill 308 is moved to the consent calendar. All right, close public our work session. Excuse me. We're going to close. We're going to fix something later, apparently. All right. We're going to close the work session on Senate Bill 308 and open a public hearing on Senate Bill 309. Would ODA come forward, please? Oh, okay. We'll make that change. Welcome, gentlemen, and once again, for the record...
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Chuck Craig, Department of Ag, and with me is Andrew Clark, the state veterinarian. Senate Bill 309 is a proposal on part of the Department of Agriculture to update our brucellosis statutes, and I will ask Dr. Clark to explain the bill.
Thank you. Doctor?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Andrew Clark, state veterinarian at the Department of Agriculture. This is in large part a housekeeping measure which alters the exceptions for the payment of indemnity because of disease. There is reference in the statute as it stands to a requirement for a negative test for the male livestock to be imported into Oregon, and the prima facie presumption of foreknowledge of brucellosis vaccination if such a test is not done. This is a very inaccurate statement the way it currently stands, because male livestock includes a number of species. The definition of livestock in the 596 statute includes a number of species which cannot be affected with brucellosis and never have been required to be tested. For example, we now have parakeets and ratites, emus and ostriches. Horses do not infect with brucellosis, and so it's a very inaccurate statement the way it stands currently. So we are eliminating that part of it. Further, brucellosis is at this point in abeyance. For the last 2 months, there have been no brucellosis infected herds in the entire United States. So we are right at the end of controlling this disease. So this proposal makes the statute accurate vis-a-vis the definition of the terminology used, and it cleans up the statute by referring to female cattle rather than female bovines, because it's cattle we're talking about, not bovines in general. And in that regard, it's a housekeeping type of measure.
Thank you, members. Do we have any questions? Vice Chair Nelson, something tells me.
Yes, something tells you that I want to ask about elk.
Elk?
In your description here.
You know, of course, we're going to be hearing an elk bill.
Okay. I'll save it.
All right. That's fine, Representative. Any further questions? Gentlemen, thank you very much. We appreciate it. The chair would like to read in the record the Oregon Veterinary Medical Association. On behalf of the Oregon Veterinary Medical Association, I encourage your support of SB 309. We view this legislation as housekeeping. Make an Oregon statute current with contemporary practice of monitoring and controlling brucellosis vaccination. It does not amend the requirement for brucellosis vaccination of imported female cattle, and it continues to ensure the requirements for the importation of male cattle are consistent with federal law. The OVMA appreciates your consideration and support. Signed, Doug Corey, DVM. President. So let it be noted in the public record. There's no one else here to testify. Dr. Clark, yes, you'd like to say something else? For the record?
Chairman, for the record, Andrew Clark. Mr. Chairman, if I may, I believe the OC, the Oregon Cattlemen's Association, is also in support of this bill.
Yes, and Doctor, thank you. You just reminded the chair that he has a note here from the Oregon Cattlemen's, which he has forgotten to read, slap his hands, that they strongly support Senate Bill 308 and Senate Bill 309. Let it so be noted in the record. And with that, and thank you, Doctor. Appreciate you taking care of my forgetfulness. It goes with the territory. The chair would like to close a public hearing on Senate Bill 309 and open a work session on Senate Bill 309.
Mr. Chair.
Vice Chair Nelson, please.
I move that we move Senate Bill 309 with a due pass to the House.
It has been moved by Vice Chair Nelson. Senate Bill 309 is passed to the, would should be passed to the full House with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Hearing none. Would clerk call, wait a moment here. Representative Doyle, please.
Can this also be placed on the consent calendar?
I believe it can.
Mr. Chair, only with the unanimous vote of all members of the committee. So you have to wait until after the vote.
Okay.
To go ahead and make a determination on whether you want to move to consent or request consent.
Certainly.
Unanimous of those present.
Mr. Chair, Representative Doyle, that is correct.
Any further discussion? Hearing none, will the clerk call the roll, please?
Representative Doyle?
Aye.
Representative Krieger?
Excuse me.
Representative Smith?
Aye.
Representative Ackerman?
Aye.
Representative Hoffman?
Aye.
Representative Nolan?
Aye.
Vice Chair King?
Excused.
Vice Chair Nelson?
Aye.
Aye. Senate Bill 309 is hereby passed to the full House with a due pass recommendation. And Representative Doyle, you have a motion.
Yes, Chair Krupp, see that we can add this to the consent calendar.
Okay, members, we have a motion to add Senate Bill 309 to the consent calendar. Is there any dissent?
Hearing none, Senate Bill 309 is requested to be moved to the consent calendar. Work session 309 is hereby closed, and we are adjourned. Thank you all very much. Look at that, 5 minutes to five.
Hey, whoa. Great.
Microphone, come on.
Yes.
No, on Thursday, we actually will have a fairly light day on Thursday, I think. Tuesday is the... I don't know what is on Thursday.
I got a lot done.
Well, we'll take a look at it. If we can not meet at all, we will. Okay. Sure. We can consider.
Okay. Thank you.
Be happy to do that. Gentlemen.
What happened?